B. from Anaheim, California.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Eric. All right, can you hear me? What? Yeah. I've been sober since January 14th, 1986, and it's good to be here. It's good to be sober in Las Vegas, and I got sober when I was 20 years old. I didn't know I was young. I was just done, and I didn't plan on that, and but I drank a lot, and it was good. I was standing out before the meeting started and just taking in the assortment of alcoholics we have, and got new guys, and guys have seen it, Samaritan House before, and that's good. I heard a guy that was a magician, and that's taking a hiatus, I guess, and I made all my hope disappear in my life. I was kind of a magician, and did that all on my own, my good ideas, and but I want to thank Rich Potter. If you don't like Rich Potter, you're not just, there's going to be somebody you don't like, so you might as well just borrow him. And, because, you know, you're not going to do the commitment, so just hate him, sit there, and judge the sound guys and me. And then you'll be happy, and you'll go home feeling better, and it'll work out for everybody. I ate a donut before the meeting, so I got a good sugar blast going on, and I'm grateful to be here. I started drinking young, obviously, and I started drinking, and I immediately figured out that, oh, by the way, the guy with 40 years, thank you for being here, and it helps me, helps quell my ego a little bit, but I started drinking very young, and I immediately figured out, I started using my math skills. I'm pretty bright, most alcoholics are pretty savvy, and I started figuring volume per proof per dollar. That was my new equation, and I started figuring out how to do that, and I went from Meister Brau to Old English 800, and I liked that. It was like a meal in a can, you know. It's got barley and hops and whey and stuff that I didn't need to eat, and I started doing other things right away. And my buddy brought a coffee can full of weed home from summer vacation, and so I helped him smoke that, and while we were drinking, and we moved up to Wild Turkey and Bacardi 151 and vodka, the non-smelling drink, right? And gin, and I was a guzzler, and I'm the guy that just says, you know, are you done with that? You know, and I started learning how to drink with my defensive elbow, and because other people like want to share, and I don't like that. And I'm not done drinking, you know, but you know, I get a couple more chugs, and I bogart all the bong hits, you know, and smoke everything. And I'm the guy that when the dealer says, you know, you'll never finish this reel, I'm like, well, hold on, so watch this. You know, I like that. I like going to your house party in the 80s when I was partying. You know, I was a walking guy. I never went anywhere. I had a lot of potential, and I didn't fulfill any of it. And I was happy like that. And, I never had a car, or money, or sometimes I had a connection, but I needed you to get all that stuff. Otherwise, I was just a walking dude. And, walking dudes, like, you know, the railroad tracks, and the holes in the fence, and behind the alley, and under the bridge, and little flower nobody ever sees, kind of poetic, you know, and that guy took my spot to rest, you know, and you know, and I just, I didn't care who I drank with, and I would walk at night and listen for music, and whenever I was in a, like, a school area or college area, and I would listen for music for your house party. And I would just wander over there and wander in, you know, and I could be like, you know, and I'd go in and I'd case out, booze is over here, and the keg is over here. I'm the guy manning the keg, you know, I got it, here you go. Hold on, honey, I'll finish yours when I get mine done again. And, you know, I'd go to the back room of wherever house I was at, knock on the door, because that's where they're doing the good stuff, and knock on the door. say, who is it? I say, it's me. They say, who's me? And they open the door, and I poke my head in, get myself jammed in the doorway. And the dude opening the door would look at the other dudes like, can we let him in or kill him? What do we do? And I'd talk, hey, what's up, dude? Hey, I'd close the door and start getting loaded. And sometimes I got hurt doing that, I'm not going to lie. But it was worth the effort, you know what I mean? It was like 50-50. But I would drink and I would do your other stuff alcoholically. So I had things happen, like my vision would start to go out after I raided your medicine cabinet. I'm drinking wild turkey, and the pills aren't working very fast, so I just eat them all. And then my vision starts to go out like those old TVs, I think I just killed myself. That part, and I come to, and somebody be like looking at me. I was accustomed to coming to with a circle of heads over me. They're looking down at you like, dude, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't know. You got anything? I started doing speed. The punkers had speed and they were busy. And I don't like that, And then I was like, I'm not going to black out. I can't. I'm drinking 151 all the time. And I like drinking. I guzzle. And then I get inaudible. I start like grunting. And I get a lazy eye like that. And I'm like drooling. My face gets all slack. And it's not like, oh, have you been drinking? You know what I mean? Everybody knew I was drunk. And then I go, meet the ladies. Some girls like that. They drive you places and cash your checks and bail you out of jail. I was with a girl. I lived in Lakewood, Long Beach, and we went up Signal Hill because it's dangerous to go up to Signal Hill and park. We were out of stuff, and she was driving because I don't have anything. And then I'm like, let me drive. You can't drive. I'm a car driver, insurance, but I know you can't drive. Let me drive your car. And I was driving her car, and I said, we got to find something. That's why I was driving. I was panicking because I didn't have anything. And I said, you don't have anything? Are you sure you don't have anything? And she said, I'm out. I'm tapped. I don't have anything. And she was ruffling through her purse, and her diet pills fell out of her purse on her lap. I look over at those, and I'm looking at her. I'm not even driving. I'm driving, but I'm staring at her, and she's like, what? And I grabbed her neck and backed her head up against the window because I love her, and I need to get this point across. And what's wrong with you? Why would you lie to me? Why would you not tell me about that? I'm dying. And she's like, I ain't got one of those, and I'm popping all these things, splitting them in half. And should I separate the colors? No. And I just need to get the next thing, and I can get some money and get something to drink. And I was at that, I'd always end up in these apartments that have nice names, like the names of the hotels in Vegas, but they're like, it'd be like, the Tropicana apartments, and they don't live up to the brochure. You know what I mean? It's like, there's nothing tropical about this joint at all. And the people stealing all the phone lines in back. I know that now because I'm a phone guy, and the cons and the people always running in and out, and beer bottles in the pool, and music going on. There was this room where you could go in through the window or the door, whatever you wanted, and there was always people there, and you weren't quite sure who lived there, but there was always something there. And I remember being there, and the girls put on the doors some nice up music, and the guys are loaded. There's a cat that came from somewhere that's loaded, and the carpet, like shag carpet, that's got different stuff in it, bong water and urine and puke and crumbs of cocaine, you hope, I think that's what that was, and a table, a big table where everybody threw their stuff, and I would always go over there, and I wasn't, I became less and less welcome over there, but I'd always be there anyway. And they're trying just to get it together so I could figure something out. And I was over there I just, they had a bunch of stuff. And I did a bunch of different drugs. And everybody else was mellow. They're all sucking in the couches and the bean bags and listening to the music. And I'm pacing. I'm pacing back and forth. And the conversations are fading and they start watching me. And finally somebody's like, dude, what is wrong with you? And I said, yeah, I need something to drink. And they're like, what? I go, I need something to drink, man. And they're like, you know how much stuff you just did? You especially. You did more than all of us. And I'm like, I don't care, dude. I need something to, because I felt like I was blasting off and I had no, like, rudders. You know what I mean? No stabilizers. You know, I'm loaded on this stuff, but I need my alcohol so I can level out and I can just get control of the, you know, ship. And they didn't get that. And the dealer, who, by the way, cut me off when I had money, which is wrong. That's wrong. And it's not right. But he said, you two go get this guy something to drink. And the other two schmucks, they look at him like, what? Like, we want. And he said, go do it. And because he didn't want me outside of his place, wandering back to his place, you know, bringing anybody back with me. And, you know, because I caused a scene everywhere. And then two dudes, they got it. Ah. And they're walking by me, and I said, whiskey, you know, and give me something to drink, man. I needed something to drink. I'm thirsty. I need something to drink. And I don't need a drink. I need two drinks. And, you know, anyway, I was, while I'm all doing all this, I'm supposed to be attending school. Can't really make it. I don't make it. And I got booted out of different places. And I went to Washington, D.C. They escorted me to the plane, sent me back. I went to Indiana. Those troopers with the big flat hats, they have those, and they're big. And they say, you're from California. Maybe you should go home, boy. And so I did, you know, and I tried different things. And you know, I had potential. And I had a Southwestern Conference college football coach sitting on a desk on the other side of me, talking to me. While he's talking to me, I have my skin crawling because I haven't had a drink that morning. It's a Sunday morning, and in college, for football, Sunday is films day, and you have to go in. You don't get a day off. You have to go in and watch these films and get critiqued. And I'm in there, and I haven't had a drink. And I need one, and he's trying to talk to me, and he has good intentions, and I'm grabbing a chair underneath me, and it's moving. It's moving because my skin is crawling, and it feels like everything I touch has cockroaches running around right underneath the surface. And so I can't explain to him while he's saying, Eric, you could be an academic All-American. Do you understand what I'm saying? Do you know what that means? Do you know where those guys go? You could do that. You just have to focus a little and quit drinking. And I can't explain to him, I appreciate your speech, but there's cockroaches crawling through my freaking skin, and I can't concentrate, and my gut's burning, and I need a freaking drink. So if you can get your speech done really quickly, I can get out of here and get loaded, and I really appreciate that, coach. You know, I couldn't put that into words. I just hung on and waited, and just womp, 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 and waited. And when the cops were talking to me, it was womp, womp, womp. Are you taking me in or not? Matter of fact, we are. Oh, okay. And, you know, I'm the guy who gets caught out of the crowd. They point to me. You know, I'm like, what? Me? You know, and yeah, you, come here. And I don't run because I'm not a good runner. When you drink Bacardi 151, you're not a good runner. And, and it just went downhill. I ended up drinking alone. The guys I was getting loaded with and drinking with, you know, they were telling me, dude, something's wrong with you. And again, and I ended up holed up in a room where I'd walk downstairs, and the sun would come up, and it would hurt, and I would try to stay unconscious as long as possible, and I'd come to clammy with that nice sheen of my body sweating out chemicals, and baggy eyes and stolen sunglasses, and get out the door, down the stairs, directly across the street from my pad was a liquor store, And I used to rotate stealing from different stores and steal bottles or drink them in the store. And, you know, but I got lazy and I just hit the same place, look at the magazines, and take whatever was on the pile closest to the door, and which could be triple sack, could be white port, or could be, you know, wild turkey or something. But I would just drink whatever I stole, put down the front of my pants. And I remember I'd be choking something down. It's like 10 in the morning, and I'm trying to gulp down whatever I stole, and it's rebounding. It's coming back up. I'm behind the liquor store. I'm in between the dumpster and the little wall, and it's just going, and it's really, like, coming up faster than normal, and it's getting past, you know, I can't keep it in. And so I got this hot stringer of this vile-tasting yellow rubber band thing, and it's bouncing up and down, and I'm like, fuck, you know, I need it to stay down. It's, come back. And I'm losing parts of it until, and I'm looking, and it's just on the concrete there, but I see chunks of something, and I know I haven't eaten in 3 or 4 days. So what are those chunks for? Do I need those? Is that part of me? And but I get a drink down. It's hot, and you know, good you know, whiskey and bile drink, and it rumbles around, and I can open my eyes. And right about then, on the street, passing the liquor store, will be a car full of kids my age. And they look like, a couple girls look like you girls, and a couple guys, you know, Biff and Skip, you know, in like a white convertible cabriolet, look like they're going to the river or the beach, you know what I mean? They like look like a commercial, you know, and I'm looking at them, I'm like, and watching them drive by, and I'm like, you know, I can't see, well, yeah, but you know, it's like, you know, that what happened, you know, what's wrong with me, you know. I'm like, they don't know what it's like to be me, and they didn't, they don't want to know what it's like to be me, you know what I mean, and they have no compassion for me, and even, you know, although if they leave the top down, I'm going to go through their car when I walk by it, you know, but I'm wondering why nobody cares about me anymore, and my dreams of returning home triumphant were shattered, and so I got, anyway, I drank down to the bottom, kind of ground down, and nobody was around me, and, you know, I was alone all the time. It didn't matter what day it was. It's Thanksgiving, it is. It's Thanksgiving, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's the Olympics. Oh, wow, is the Michelob on sale? What's, you know, you know, just kind of drifted in, and I finally, I just, like, I was getting booted out of where I was living again, and I didn't want to, you know, try to camp, you know, or live in somebody's car in their garage next to the cat box, and I called Mom, and, Mom, what? Can I come home? No, you just like your father, you're not going to ruin it for me and your sister, click. So I was like, oh. All right, no phone, no refrigerator. That's what that means, you know. And because if I have a phone in the refrigerator, I can start up again. And so I called Dad, and Dad was in Arizona, and he said, "No, you're not coming here." But I think I have some insurance. You want to try to do something? And I just said, "All right," and because I couldn't think of anything else to do, I had no more good ideas, and I usually have a lot of them, and most of them work. Anyway. And I ended up, he said, "Get back down to Long Beach, I'll be there working." And I ended up getting a ride with some guy that looked like Eddie Van Halen and his girlfriend. Please don't name me Amy. She was the girl that, you know, would help you when you needed help, as long as you don't touch her. And I was like, all right, you guys give me a ride, man. And we're getting loaded all the way back. And I my body feels it, and my mind is clear. And I get into the, you know, strange series of events. I can't even put them together. But we ended up, you know, in this hospital. And I went from, you know, alleys and garages and blacklight posters and trippy dudes and, you know, being the, you know, fifth guy in a, you know, 66 Dodge Dart with shades on and Atlantic Boulevard in Long Beach, you know, in the middle of the night, to a hospital, to bright lights and linoleum and people walking in white uniforms and starchy sheets and asking me questions with a clipboard. I was like, wow, okay, and I started telling them, you know, I drank a lot, I don't know how much, more than that, you know, and do you do these drugs, blah, blah, yeah, I don't know, I smoked something, I don't know what it was, it wasn't just weed, blah, blah, I told them everything, and they checked me in, and just took on my clothes, and gave me these pajamas, and very drafty pajamas, and but I felt kind of safe for myself. I was like, relax, you know, like the third time you go to jail, you're like, oh, I'm tired, I'm gonna take a nap. You know what I mean? Like the first time you're like, oh no. Like the third time you're like, oh, apple for your milk? What up? You know, and like, don't fit you, you know that. But you know, and I'm like, now I felt safe, like, okay, I can't hurt myself in here. And cause I'm a one car accident, you know, I'm a dude walking down the street and I can, you know that thing around your eyes called your orbital? I can crack my orbital around my eye and knock my tooth out by myself just trying to walk. So I felt safer in the hospital. And I got in there. And they put us in a room. They had like 10 beds in it, and it was the PCU room. And it was you had to detox. You had to stay in there for 3 days. I'm 20, right? And I'm coming off a lot of different stuff. But there's guys in there that are old, like 40. You know what I mean? And 50, 60, and they got that street, tan, dirt street, you know, like leathered and weathered, and I'm like, man, I'm looking at them and their detox, they're shaking, and all there's a bunch of beds in there, those medical beds with the metal sides on them, clipboard hanging on the end, and they're shaking and going, and, you know, making weird noises and sitting up, you know, and mumble it, you know. And I'm in there, and I don't feel, I'm not, like, looking down on them, but I'm like, these dudes are in bad shape. But I know there's nothing in me going, I'm different. It's just like, I hope I don't, I wonder if I'm going to get that bad. And then about 14 hours later, I'm going, you know, I'm looking at the dude next to me, and like, you know, like, give me some hope, you know, like, you're an old-timer. I know you've been to detox before. Are we going to live? He's like, oh, I don't know. No, man. How long has it been? It's been another 12 seconds, you know. And it just took forever. Those 3 days took forever. And, you know, and that's like, what day? Is it morning or night? Or, you know, and then they go pop the double doors. Come on out. Like, oh, great. You know, and they give me my clothes back. And then they put you in a room with a roommate. And then they start doing the typical institutional, you know, cadence. Get up, we're going to read books, then you have breakfast. Oh, breakfast, wow, you know. And then we're going to, you know, stretch. What? And then we're going to have group. Oh, all right. Are there girls in group? No. Oh, all right. And we're going to watch a movie, and then you're going to talk to your counselor. Oh, who's my counselor? That dude? No, she is. What? You know, and all right, and I didn't like anybody, but I started learning the lingo because I'm young, fast, and smart, and now I'm eating every day. I'm eating everything I can get my hands on, and other people's food. Hey, are you done with that? And I got an appetite, and I'm starting to listen, and I hear the easy does it, live and let live, one day at a time. My, you know, I shared one time, I want to be a clean, serene, unconditional love machine. I was like, yay! And then my buddy stole the... I had to change roommates because I was disrupting their therapy or whatever. And Eric, he did it again. What? And so I got the other idiot that always got in trouble. And we're roommates. And he snatched the white out from the nurse's station. Typewriter correction fluid. And if you don't know, I think it's near whiteout now. I think it's non-toxic. But back then, you could inhale some fumes and you could just like feel, oh, that's a lot of, I just like blew out section 8 through 9 right there. You know, you could tell. It felt like there were needles coming out of the top of your head. And I didn't even think about it. I had 26 days. My family came in shifts. Like, my mom would come in when my dad wasn't there. Not like they came in a lot, but they couldn't be in the same room together. They'd fight. And then I go, oh, see why I'm an alcoholic? And, I got loaded. And I didn't mean to. And I didn't want to. And I just started getting a little hope. And my counselor, just had enough. I had my gift of charming, you know, personality, just blew her over the edge. Group, I was doing something, and she said, I'm sick of your shit. I'm like, whoa, lady, counsel yourself, you know, and she's like, you're going to this men's stag, and they had some guys that could come to the hospital and pick us up and take us to the outside meeting. And she said, I already signed you up, and they won't put up with your crap. And I was like, uh-oh, well, you know, I always know where, when you cross the line, you know, because it's way back there, and like I crossed the line with the counselor lady, see what happened. So I kind of heard some murmurs about the AA men's stag, and they were like ruffians, you know, and I put on my penalty and my hat, and got ready, and I see three guys coming down the hall, I'm like, I know that's them. And there's a dude with a beard, a blonde beard and long blonde hair, and the full-on biker vest with those pins, and he's like 6'5", like berserker from the north, you know, Nordic, you know, whatever, 7-foot sword type guy, and blue eyes, and he's in the middle, and there's a Mexican kid named Alex, got full sleeve tattoos, and he's walking next to him, and this other guy named Bulldog Bob, who, because he looked like a bulldog, big, giant, stocky shoulders, and I know that, I just know, they're coming for me, you know what I mean, and they walked right up to me and said, are you Eric? And I'm like, yeah, and get in the car, and I got in the car, and they let the kid talk to me, Alex, and he was 19, and he had 2 years sober, and I'm 20, and I'm like, man, that goes my age excuse, just blown right out of the water. And I couldn't fathom that. But he was just talking. He said, did you drink and use every day? I said, yeah. He said, well, then you need to go to a meeting every night. And I was like, okay. You know, and he said, you need to get a sponsor. And you need to do this. And you know, he was breaking it down. And we got to the meeting, and I sat in the back. I sat in the back and just observed everybody. And I could tell they were full-grown men going to a meeting that they didn't have to go to. They didn't have wristbands or leg bands or they were there of their own choice. And I could tell that they were sober. And they knew about drinking and using. And they knew, you know, what, you know, stuff that you have to drink and use to do. And Alex came to the back of the room, sat in a chair in front of me, and he spun around. And right about then, I'm thinking, I'm looking at him, I'm like, I can't do this. Not because I don't want to, I want to. I really want to, and when I got loaded in that detox, I was depressed. I was like, you're dead. There's no way. You don't even like whiteout. You never even done it before. What if it was whiskey, or beer, or whatever? One time I hopped the wall and escaped from the detox. They didn't know I was gone. And I got over the wall. I got a pack of Marlboro Reds. I'm smoking. I couldn't take it. I was like, I'm gone. It was nighttime. And I walked down the street, and I'm like, where am I going? Where am I going to go? You know what I mean? There was a little park. I sat down. It wasn't a park. It was like the green area by where the like maintenance trash is. But there was a bench. And I sit down. I'm like, smoking, chain smoking. And I'm like, you got to go back. You got to go back. Where are you going to go? Nobody in the world wants to see you. And I'm like, and I started walking back. I decided to make it a trek and cross the street and then come back. And I walked past the pizza parlor while I was walking, and I stalled out and I'm smoking. And it, like I said, it's nighttime. Pizza parlor where they have like Little League pictures and families having pizza. And there's people having pizza and a beer. And I'm smoking. I'm standing outside on the street. I'm like, man, look at that. This is having a pizza and a beer. A beer and a piece of pizza. Why can't I have a beer and a piece of pizza? and I'm looking at the picture, and then I'm looking at the glass mug, sweating, dripping, little bubbles coming up, and I'm like tuning in, and I'm right there, dude. I'm 3 inches tall, and I'm just like want to hug this cool glass beer mug, and then I realize everybody in the restaurant's looking at me. I like got my head against the glass, and I'm just like, and I go, oh man, and I just run back to hop the wall, back to where I went over the wall, and walk in, and nobody even knew I was gone. You know, and so sitting in the back of that meeting, I'm like, I can't stay sober, dude. I can't even walk past the pizza parlor. And Alex sits in front of me, and he spins around, and he says, hey. He goes, hey, man, you think you're tough? And I'm like, oh, I know this question. They always send the little guy, you know. And I said, I want to be diplomatic. I don't want to seem like a punk. As I said, I'd do all right. Pretty good, huh? Yeah. And he said, well, let's see you stay sober then. And I was like, you know, I see guys like you all the time. They go to the hospital, and they get cleaned up, and their mom comes and brings them some clothes. I'm like, how do you know that? You know, and then you come over to my meeting, and I've been going to meetings every day, and busting my ass to stay sober, and working the steps, and doing my commitments, and going to work, and I got insurance, and a car, and a place that I pay rent, and I'm doing good, and you come over here, and sit here, and run all your crap out, and tell you little racy stories about where the paramedics resuscitated you, you know, and I'm like, what's up, dude? He's all, but you ain't gonna be here next week, and I'm like, oh yeah, man, I'll be, he's all, when you get out of there, you ain't coming back, none of you guys ever do. And I'm like, dude, I'll be back, dude. I like this meeting. You're cool, man. I like you guys. And he's like, nah, I'll believe it when I see it. I said, I'm going to be back. I'll be here when you're gone. And I am. But in 5 minutes, Alex turned me from, there's no way I don't do this. I don't stick with stuff. I don't ever finish. To, I'm going to be here no matter what. And something inside clicked, and I grabbed onto something. And I got Alex tricked me into getting a sponsor, and that sponsor took me through the steps. The first night I was out of that detox, I hooked up with those guys. I got in the car. I started going to AA meetings all the time. We went to AA meetings on the weekend. We went to AA meetings every night. If I wasn't there at a meeting, you know, I had to work 8 full hours. You know, I was tired. And they'd say stuff like, oh, apparently your sobriety didn't mean anything to you yesterday. I was like, oh man, that's kind of cold. You know, I did my steps and, you know, and all my, stuff, fourth and fifth step. You know, it's not hard to work the steps if you got somebody showing you. And I got through all that stuff and, but I'm going to tell you something about, my sobriety, getting sober young. And, I tell my drunk a log in case there's another person in here that identifies. That's what we're supposed to do. And I tell her what happened. It was right after I got loaded in there, where I didn't know what to do, and I knew it was over for me. Somebody came and gave me an answer. But I found a group, and if you're newly sober, a couple years or whatever, I was nuts. I'd raise my hand to share in my home group where everybody knew and loved me, and when the guy called on me, everybody go, ah, no, you know, like, not this guy. And I couldn't hold a job. I overreacted to everything. Whether I was weeping or strangling somebody at a convention, there was always something, you know, like, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? You know, and, I'm thinking, you're supposed to know. You tell me what's wrong with me. You know, and, but I stayed with that sponsor in that group, and, I had problems, man. I thought I had POTA, problems other than alcoholism. They told me, don't take any medication and see what happens if you stay sober longer. So I thought I'd stick with that, because they said God can work if you're not, you know, cutting them off with some medication. And I'm like, all right. So I had to trust God. And I found myself in a place where I learned how to respect sobriety. I found myself in a place where when the other guys sat around an old-timer and listened to them, I just looked around and said, they're listening. I'm going to shut up and listen. I found myself in a place where the other alcoholics like me said, dude, what are you doing? Why are you talking to her when you're supposed to be making coffee? I said, because I'm crazy. I'm sorry. I go make coffee. I found myself in a place I was in a meeting with guys, and then some other dude would come up to me at a meeting that was not from my group, and he'd be like, "Hey, bro, so how's it going?" I'm like, "All right." And he's like, "Man, are you hanging out with those guys?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Dude, you know, those guys try to run your life and stuff." I'm like, "Well, I don't know, dude. I kind of need a lot of help." And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, how long are you sober?" I'm like, "I got 6 months, dude. That's a record for me." I'm like, "How long are you sober?" And he's like, "Yeah, well, I got 7 months." I'm like, "Oh, okay. So when's the first time you came to AA?" He's like, "Oh, I've been coming in and out for like 15 years. I'm like, "All right, bro, I gotta go." You know, and I found myself going back to the guys I was staying sober with, and I think I'd rather pay attention to them, you know. And if you went in for an operation, and the doctor said, "Well, I was a doctor, and then I got my certificate pinched, and, but then I got it back, and then they took it again, but now I've had it for like 3 weeks. Are you gonna go in for the operation?" Yeah. So anyway. And they were operating on me and making me better. You know, my defects got me hooked up with a little blonde girl whose parents had some money and whose dad had a shotgun. And I went through that, and that failed because my character defects started that and they ended that. And there were some amends there and some pain. And but I also found myself back in the same home group that I never deviated from, people saying, "We love you, you know. We'll support you. We're here in your corner," you know. And, you know, when I wanted to drink on a Sunday morning, a year sober, and I ended up in front of a bottle, looking at a bottle in a store ready to buy it, I had an old timer in my corner that after I just peeled out of his driveway at 6 in the morning on a Sunday, when I went outside and called him, he said, "Was that you in my driveway?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Get to my house," you know, and he and his wife sat up and talked me down, you know, talked me off the hill, and, you know, and so if you're new and sitting here, and you have a lot of options here in Viva Las Vegas, you know, you have a lot of people you can, you know, try stuff with, but I'm going to tell you something. If you have a place that, you know, where you have some sobriety, and your sponsor says, you know, "I want you to do some writing, I want you to be responsible, did you stay at work today? You know, I know you went there in the morning, but were you there all day?" You know, I would stay with them. If they said, "Did you do your commitment? Because if you don't do it, we're going to take it from you." I stayed with them. You know, when I had a sponsor that said, "You know, you're going to do this the way we did it, or you could, there's plenty of other groups you can go to," I decided to stay with the guys that stayed in my corner. You know, they said, "We're going to say the Lord's Prayer, and you're going to take your hat off." I said, "Yes, sir." You know, I learned something new, you know, and that's what's been working for me, man. And now I'm married again, and because I had a sponsor that said, "Why don't you go date that girl over there?" And I was like, "Ah, she's not really my type." He said, "Yeah, I know. Why don't you go date that girl over there?" You know, and you know why she wasn't? Because she wasn't a gamey little et cetera. She worked a program and was honest and loving and caring. And that really makes me look bad. You know what I mean? Like, oh. You know. And, but she brings me up and she keeps me, it's easy to be faithful. It's easy to be faithful to my God when He's been working for me for 22 years. It's easy to be grateful to my home group when they've been in my corner for 22 years. It's easy to, you know, talk to this kid I'm sponsoring, Jinky, after he calls me when he can't get a job and cuts off his dreadlocks that he had for since 1999. You know, he called me up, and he's got a newcomer cell phone, so it's all crackly, and, you know, it's all broken. So he calls me up and says, "Hey, you know, this is JJ." And he talks really fast, and he's like, and his teeth are broken in the back from doing speed, so he can't, he's like, "What do you think?" And he says, "Yeah, I cut my hair off in a quarter inch." I'm like, "Call me and tell me you cut a quarter inch off your hair?" And he's like, "No, my whole head is a quarter inch long, my hair is a quarter inch." And he had those, you know, Grateful Dead dreadlocks. And, you know, and he got a job at Jamba Juice, you know. And you know what? When he was late, he ran to Jamba Juice. He ran. I know alcoholics won't bend over and pick up a cigarette butt. And when I'm working with a kid that ran to Jamba Juice to save his job, it makes it easier for me to do something for my sponsor, do something for you, do something for my wife. Be a better person, you know, and I don't know what you're looking for, but Alcoholics Anonymous has been good to me, man. I've OD'd, my heart stopped, all that stuff, never even fazed me. But I got into AA and I started seeing people that were walking like they were talking, and that got me. That affected me. And somewhere inside of the human side of me said, I want to be a real AA member like those guys. I want to make a difference to somebody, you know, where I was walking and I couldn't figure out anybody that wanted to have me. You know, I wanted to do something here. And there's a part in the book that I like, and where Bill had his experience in the hospital, and he says, you know, Doc, what's going on? And the doctor said, I don't know, Bill, but whatever is going on, you better hang on to it, because anything's better than the way you were. And ever since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's been a step up for me. You know, anything's better than the way I was, you know. And if you're new and sitting in here, hang on to this, Bill. And, you know, anything's better than the way you were. Thanks, that's it.
For the others in the meeting, please remain seated until it is time to participate in the Lord's Prayer. Thank you. The specific group has 3 regular meetings per week, Saturday at 7 p.m. at the Reformation Lutheran Church, 580 East St. Louis Avenue. Tuesday, 7 p.m. at 9840 West Ann Road, we have a step study from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and our speaker meeting every Thursday. We also have several other commitments and meetings during the week, which are listed in detail on our newsletter and on our website, www.thespecificgroup.com. There are approximately 600 meetings of AA each week in the Las Vegas area. We advise that you attend as many as possible, and we hope that you will join our meeting again soon. The members of this group believe in the concept of a home group. We welcome you to join us and become a member. Our regular business meetings are the second Sunday of each month at 5 p.m. at Central Office, located at 1431 East Charleston Boulevard, Suite 15. We also strongly believe in sponsorship. If you do not have a sponsor, we encourage you to get one tonight. Will all of those willing to sponsor please raise your hand? Newcomers, please take note. This group collects money to purchase books and literature to take into the hospitals and institutions. There will be someone by the door as you exit after the meeting to accept any donations you care to offer. Also, for everyone's safety, please move to the rear of the room towards the exit directly after the meeting to allow the chair stackers enough space to stack and remove the chairs. The Court and Recovery House cards have been signed and can be picked up at the commitment table as you exit the meeting. Now, after a moment of silent meditation, will all those who care to join us in the Lord's Prayer?
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen.
Stand just for the day. Hey, Dre, give me a hand with your kids, huh? Hey, Black Eyed, buddy.